This is Crossroads, the Get Religion podcast.
There are conservative bishops in the United States that oppose your new efforts to revisit teachings and traditions. How do you address their criticism?
You used an adjective, conservative. That is, conservative is one who clings to something and does not want to see beyond that. It is a suicidal attitude. Because one thing is to take tradition into account, to consider situations from the past, but quite another is to be closed up inside a dogmatic box.
That's an excerpt from Nora O'Donnell's interview with Pope Francis on 60 Minutes. The Pope had a lot to say. That probably got the most press, calling conservative Catholics suicidal. What did he mean, and why were there so few difficult follow-ups for the Pope in a once-in-a-lifetime appearance on 60 Minutes? Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry is Senior Fellow on Communications and Culture at St. Constantine College in Houston, Texas. He writes Rational Sheep, a Substack newsletter for faith and mass media. He's author of the National On Religion column for the Andrews McMeel Universal Syndicate. And for two decades, he led the GetReligion.org website. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So why does Pope Francis apparently think that conservative American bishops are being suicidal, but the German bishops aren't?
And the brief answer to that question, based on the CBS 60 Minutes interview, is who cares? There was, to me, this was, if the suicidal label on the American conservatives is the big idea of this interview, and I don't think there's any doubt if you scan what media coverage there is of the 60 Minutes piece, the suicidal American conservatives is the lead. That's the big idea of this interview. I think almost everybody agreed on that. There isn't anything in the 60-minute interview that shows the slightest awareness of the fact that the parts of the church that have gained the most clout under Pope Francis are the sections of the church, primarily Europe and nations such as his own, Argentina, which is extremely European in its attitudes and the health of its church. There's no awareness that those are the churches that are currently in a state of demographic collapse, if not some sort of suicide. So the CBS interview, the 60 Minutes interview, more than anything else, is not about what's happening in the Roman Catholic Church. The interview is about what Pope Francis has to say that is relevant to the world of American political life and thought. There are so many things that out of this interview that I could read, but the interview in a nutshell is summed up in a piece that Poynter.org, the think tank on American journalism, they did a kind of a behind-the-scenes piece. And it stressed over and over, this was the biggest interview ever. This was the biggest get, you know, that a show could possibly get would be an hour with the Pope. And when they were summing up what this is all about, Nora O'Donnell said, this is a different kind of Pope. He's the first from the Americas, the first from the Southern Hemisphere, the first Jesuit. And he has been much more progressive and inclusive. And he has been much more progressive and inclusive is really all you need to know about the stance of the show toward interviewing him. Anything he does or says that shows this progressive, inclusive, friendly, shepherding image of him is going to get stressed. And anything else is not going to be pursued, especially anything that's based on hard facts. The Catholic historian and social critic George Weigel wrote a fascinating piece for Catholic World Report in which he said the headline was "The Question 60 Minutes Should Have Asked Pope Francis." And we can get to some of those, you know, in the midst of terms of what they did ask and what they didn't ask. And critically, what follow-up questions they did not ask. But I thought his opening sentence was brutal and dead spot on accurate. He opened his piece by saying, "Whatever else it managed to accomplish, Nora O'Donnell's 60-minute interview with Pope Francis, aired on May 19, obliterated that much-lauded program's reputation for hard-hitting investigative journalism." And that's, like I said, that's a devastating sentence, and I believe it's completely accurate. And when I think of 60 Minutes interviewing someone that 60 Minutes truly wants to probe and challenge, it's all about the hard questions and even more the hard follow-up questions. And we don't see any of that in this interview, which says to me the Pope had a great day on 60 Minutes. And how often can you take a controversial public figure and leader, have them go on 60 Minutes, and at the end of all of that content say, "Wow, he had a great day. There was no difficulties. They didn't do anything. They didn't lay a finger on him." You kind of expect 60 Minutes to be a bit tougher than that.
Is that a comment on 60 Minutes post Mike Wallace, who would, just out of sheer cantankerousness, level difficult questions at any person he's talking to? Or is that more generally about the press? This, they wanted to present the Pope that they want. This was wishful thinking on their part.
Well, it's interesting. The next sentence that Weigel writes, and not to do public relations for George Weigel, but the very next sentence he wrote touches on what you just said. "The questions posed touched on none of the critical issues raised by the pontificate over the past 11 years. And here comes the big part. Even as they reinforced any number of mainstream media caricatures of the Pope, his teaching, and his mode of governance." This was a perfect drama appearance by the Pope that the media loves. It was very close to being public relations in terms of what it asked. And I can demonstrate that with a couple of follow-up questions. Because even when they ask a question that sounded tough, they didn't do the obvious follow-up. And they left all of the media impressions of this papacy solidly in place. And for the Pope, that's good. For the press, that's good. And I'm sure half the Catholics who watched this loved it, and half the Catholics who watched it didn't. It all, in the end, comes down to what you think of how this particular Pope has used the power that he's been given. I, recalling something a wise Catholic priest said right after the same-sex union document came out, and of course, the same-sex blessing issue was addressed during this interview on 60 Minutes. And this priest, I think, said something interesting, saying, "All that matters now, based on what they've said about same-sex union," which basically the document seemed kind of confused in terms of what it wanted to accomplish or whatever, and many people thought that confusion was the point. The goal of the document was to change pastoral theology at the church level, how particular people, same-sex couples, are handled in terms of pastoral care and their relationship with the church, without changing what the church taught on the subject of marriage and same-sex unions. And if that sounds confusing, that's the point. And we have a perfect reenactment of that in this 60 Minutes interview. But this priest said, all that really matters now is not what the Pope says about same-sex blessings. They may pull some of it back. They may tweak some of it. They may put out a statement that seems to kind of hint at discipline for those who abuse the document or whatever. He said, all that matters is who is promoted and who is disciplined. On this issue and on the other doctrinal issues involved in all of these matters, what matters for this Pope at this point is, what does he do with his power? Not what does he say in an interview with 60 Minutes.
We've often discussed the fact that generally the press is not irreligious, but that they have good religion and bad religion. Was this an example of that?
Oh, of course. The image of this Pope is that this is the good Pope who has followed two conservative, in the second case, cantankerous, old popes. And it didn't help at all, of course, that Pope Benedict was a former German liberal who kind of converted back to small o Orthodox Catholicism and became the theological mind that assisted St. Pope John Paul II. So, yeah, that's exactly what this is. But I think there's something even more basic at work here in terms of what kinds of questions got asked and what didn't. And ironically, when I was reading this stuff through again, I flashed back to something that happened when I was a reporter long ago in Charlotte. This is something that happened in the Southern Baptist Convention. And try to make this story as short as possible. I was flying to the convention, and I ended up on the same airplane with the late Charles Stanley, who was on his way to Kansas City, where he was going to be elected as the latest conservative president of the Southern Baptist Convention. And at this moment in time, the SBC was really still up for grabs. And I passed him. He was in first class, of course, and I was not. I passed him on the airplane and went, oh, okay. So once we were in the air, I walked up to introduce myself, give him my card, and ask for an interview. And I really have to confess that while I was approaching him, I looked over his shoulder for about 60 seconds and scanned the document that was in his hand. And the document in his hand was a memo on how religious leaders should deal with the press. And this is interesting since God hadn't called him to run for the presidency yet. That didn't happen for another day or two. But the PR agency had already written the memo. And the things that he said fit perfectly with this 60-minute interview. And I didn't write them down word for word, but I took, you know, scribbled some notes and then later kind of went back through it myself. Here's the advice from the professional spin doctors. Number one, when asked hard questions, give short answers and move on. No follow-up questions allowed. Two, avoid questions from national religion beat pros, since they know the facts about SBC life, and thus they're going to ask actual dangerous questions based on facts. And third, I'm sorry for all the broadcasters who might be listening, welcome questions from TV journalists, since those newsrooms contain no religion specialist, and you will be dealing with someone who has no background on the larger issues that you're actually talking about. You're going to be asked, what is your hopes for the Southern Baptist Convention? Not, at 2 a.m. last night, you were in hotel room number so-and-so-so at the Hilton with the following five people. Were you discussing whether or not you should run for president of the SBC? I mean, you can hear what kind of a factual question that is. And there was somebody in that press conference poised to ask that question. And when he did, Charles Stanley just ignored his question, went right to the next one, and nobody punished him at all. Now, to some degree, that's what happened in this papal interview. We had a TV reporter without a whole lot of facts, although you think of 60 Minutes as the highest quality of TV interviewing. But none of that hard-hitting, deep-digging, factual core of journalism showed up in this interview. None of it. And we can now talk as much as we want about what questions they didn't ask, and, you know, and that they should have asked.
So, Terry, I imagine that to land an interview with Pope Francis comes with an enormous number of stipulations, one of them being probably that the Pope's people get a final approval on the final cut that makes it to air. Is it possible that O'Donnell asked some toughies, but the Pope's people nixed them?
Well, if that's the case, it was done in advance, because CBS is saying that the special broadcast, the follow-up, was the entire interview. CBS is also saying that he gave them way more time than they had negotiated, so that they actually ended up with a bigger palette with which to work than they expected. So I think we have to assume it's possible that there are follow-ups that were edited out, but that would be saying that the Pope gave them more than an hour. The Pope gave them an hour and a half, and that some of that was edited out. I don't think anybody can expect to get more than an hour with the Pope under those circumstances. So I think we have to assume, unless CBS is hiding something, that this is the interview with him that they wanted, and this is what they got. To me, what would normally be a hard question would be about the sexual abuse crisis, especially if you've done any reading about this particular pope and his handling of some specific situations. But listen to the following wording from the interview. Nora O'Donnell says, "You have done more than anyone to try to reform the Catholic Church and repent for years of unspeakable sexual abuse against children by members of the clergy. But has the church done enough?" Well, I think a lot of people would question whether France has done more than anyone. But once again, there's that attitude of kind of supplication to him. Then the translation from the Pope's response is, "It must continue to do more. Unfortunately, the tragedy of the abuse is enormous, and against this, an upright conscience, and not only not to permit it, but to put in place the conditions that it does not happen." Nora O'Donnell, "You have said zero tolerance." Pope Francis, "It cannot be tolerated. But when there is a case of religious man or woman who abuses, the full force of the law falls upon him. And there has been a great deal of progress." Now, if this was a person that, in the old saying, 60 Minutes was trying to lay a glove on him, was trying to ask something tough and see how he responds, George Weigel notes that the obvious follow-up question to that answer is, "Why has Father Marco Rupnik, whose sins and crimes of sexual abuse are among the vilest, most satanic on record, not been reduced from the clerical state, forbidden to function as a priest in order to live a life of penance?" And you could have even worded that harder by saying, "Why is your friend, Father Marco Rupnik, has not been removed from life as a priest? And why, when the church did discipline him on several cases, Pope Francis removed some of those disciplines and softened the blow?" So if you were asking Donald Trump, I'm sorry to mention Donald Trump, but if 60 Minutes was interviewing Donald Trump and brought up his marriage, and he gave some sort of soft answer about, "I think we're doing better than ever," can you picture 60 Minutes not coming back with a question like, "But what about," and going straight to some of the things that we factually know about the private life of Donald Trump? Well, there are factual things that we know about this Pope's handling of sexual abuse. And the Marco Rupnik case is just such an astonishing scandal. Why no follow-up? It seemed to be this whole interview in kind of a nutshell. There was another great question that George Weigel proposed, because if you were going to name the most famous words in the history of the Francis papacy. You were going to get it down to five words. Can you imagine what quote I'm thinking of?
Something along the lines of, who are we to judge?
Who am I to judge? And that was, of course, that statement about homosexuality, which actually, in the context of his answer, I'm going to defend the Pope on this, he was making it very clear that this was something between an individual and his confessor, that this was something to be handled at the level of a spiritual advisor. And thus, who am I to judge if I'm not a person's spiritual director? But the press turned this immediately into an all-encompassing statement of change on Catholic attitudes toward homosexual activity. And thus, Weigel came up with what I think would have been a tremendous question for this interview. Your Holiness, you once responded to a reporter's question about a specific case of a homosexual priest who was trying to lead an upright life by saying that if a person turns from error and works with grace to live consciously, who am I to judge? The global media immediately and inaccurately universalized this, et cetera, et cetera. And that Weigel's question ends with, have you ever thought it important to correct that misrepresentation? Perfectly valid question about what everyone would immediately know was among the most famous things that's happened in this papacy, especially in terms of kind of the public image of this. It launched a dozen national magazine covers from everything from news magazines to the gay community's publications.
Another more recent statement from the Pope on the blessing of same-sex unions, he actually corrected the interviewer. Mm-hmm. And I like Weigel's citation of a meme showing the Pope, yes, I believe, blessing a bicycle, saying, I'm not blessing the bicycle, I'm blessing two individual wheels. And the question gave him a classic opportunity to equivocate again on that particular subject.
Well, he actually said some valid things about it, but that's why this priest was saying, what really matters now is not whether the Pope continues with this formula. The pastoral care of these people is what's important, but we haven't changed the doctrines of the Church. Well, that's where we get back to where we started, which is the suicidal quote, because his entire point was that American conservatives, the attitude that they have that is suicidal, is the fact that they aren't treating church tradition, centuries of church tradition, as a guideline. Was guideline the word he used? And instead, they're treating it, he said, they're locking themselves in a box, in a doctrinal box. Mark Kellner at the Washington Times does an excellent job toward the end of his short piece about the CBS interview in noting that what we have here is a classic case of the degree to which the Roman Catholic Church believes that ancient, infallible doctrines can evolve. And it seems to me that Pope Francis is saying the problem with these American conservatives is they think we can't change the catechism, which raises a great question, since Pope John Paul II, Saint Pope John Paul II, wrote an entire papal document, an encyclical on the splendor of truth, in which he argued that there are Catholic teachings that are eternal. They are biblical. They are transcendent. We cannot change them. Well, the Pope seems to be saying that John Paul II is locked in a doctrinal box and that that's suicidal. There are some follow-up questions that should have been asked at that point. Because if he's saying we haven't changed the Church's teachings on sexuality and marriage, at that point, a good follow-up question, even coming from the left, would be, are you saying that they can't be changed? Because his appointed leaders of the Synod on Synodality, at least two of them, have been put on the record and have said, We believe the church's doctrines should change on homosexuality. That's another great factual question. Like, have you told your own leaders of the synod that they're wrong and that this kind of change can't be considered? That would be a tough, very 60-minute style follow-up question, but we didn't get it.
What did you make of the non-Catholic media coverage of this interview?
Well, what's most intriguing is how little of it there is. I did some searches and looked for, you know, if I have missed something in the New York Times, I hope someone will let me know. But, you know, there was a piece by Religion News Service, and that led with suicidal. They almost everyone led with the suicidal quote, that these evil American conservatives who are harassing, you know, the Pope, they're the suicidal people, as opposed to Germany, where attendance is collapsing, membership is collapsing, the number of priests is collapsing. Why doesn't the Pope attach the label suicidal to bishops in Germany, like at the beginning of the interview today when we were talking about that? Why not attach it to Europe, the section of the Catholic world that he's raised up even more in power, as opposed to the American church, which has its weaknesses, but is still a pretty lively and in some ways growing church? So I'm surprised they didn't cover more, which says to me, you know, we've talked a lot about this interview. The big idea here is that there's nothing really new in that 60 minutes interview. And that's the last thing 60-minute producers want to be able to say when granted arguably one of the most important interviews they've landed in a decade or two. We didn't get anything new. We didn't make him clarify anything in terms of hard information. We didn't ask any questions he wasn't ready for. And at the end of it, what you got was the same stuff that you've heard from this Pope before. Maybe applied in some ways to like him talking about issues on the American border, where he makes the interesting statement that, well, maybe you could send somebody back to their country, but only after they've had a kind of a fair hearing. Is the Pope actually proposing that every single person who crosses the southern border against existing laws deserves an individual trial? That would have been a good follow-up question, too. But this interview wasn't about factual questions based on research into the details of Catholic life. It was about presenting this Pope as the Pope they like, the good Pope.
If you were given the opportunity to ask a few questions of Nora O'Donnell, the interviewer in this case, about her interview with Pope Francis, what would you ask her?
I would ask her specifically a question or two about the Synod on Synodality. I would ask her if she understands who the leaders are and what countries they're from. I think that would be interesting to see if she knows that. I think it would be interesting to ask her if she thinks American conservatives that are opposed by this Pope all oppose Vatican II. What does she actually know about Vatican II? Because basically, the Catholic left has continued to be able to tell the press, these people in America who don't like Pope Francis, they're all opposed to Vatican II. And that's really simplistic. There's no question that there are some American conservatives who hate Vatican II, no doubt about it. But the overwhelming majority are not saying that. They're saying that some things that are happening in the life of the church violate Vatican II, what Vatican II actually says. And the original Latin Mass is a perfect example of that. There's nothing in Vatican II that forbade Pope Benedict from his compromise to try to make peace with the traditional Latin Mass crowd, which is a growing segment of the American church and growing segment of some other parts. So I would ask her how she prepared for the interview and maybe test her knowledge a little bit on the facts. For example, does she know who Father Marco Rupnik is? There you go. There's a question. Who is Father Marco Rupnik, and why does his case matter? I guess that would be the first question I would ask after repeating to her her own question about sexual abuse and its importance.
With only about 30 seconds,
okay.
If the successor to Francis is more like John Paul II or Benedict, how would a 60 Minutes interview go with that particular pope?
Well, I would say, first of all, that it's a good chance the Vatican wouldn't grant the interview because they would expect 60 Minutes to treat that pope the way any cultural conservative would be treated. The Vatican might not give that interview. That's the briefest answer I can give to answer your question, because I think that's how it would be handled.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow on Communications and Culture at St. Constantine College in Houston, Texas. He writes Rational Sheep, a Substack newsletter for faith and mass media. He's author of the National On Religion column for the Andrews McMeel Universal Syndicate, and for two decades he led the GetReligion.org website. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.